Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today we speak to a runner who's been able to use walking and running as a tool for sobriety. We talk about how after being in and out of rehabilitation centers for a few years, there was one consistent bright spot in her life: moving. It was time for processing, for routine, and time to do something for herself. Eventually, in her fifth year anniversary of being sober, she was able to pull lottery for Chicago, and at that point, now had the plan to run her first marathon. Her experience was one of resilience, strength, and community. There's so much that I got out of this episode, and I hope that you all feel inspired as well. Without further ado, here's her story. Please welcome Helen Hansen. Helen Hansen, thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. I'm excited to kind of break down your journey. I know little bits and pieces from just following you on social media, but welcome to the show this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Taylor. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's kind of start from the beginning. I know you've got 10 years of running under your belt, so this has obviously been a journey for you. But where did all of it start for you?
Yeah, so it really started in college. I had been a dancer my whole life, ballet primarily. And then I kind of got to college, really quit a lot of movement, gained some weight. And it started as, okay, well, I want to lose this weight. And a couple sorority sisters were like, yeah, we go jogging. And I was like, that does not sound fun, but I'll give it a shot. And yeah, I remember finishing my first mile one day. It probably took me 17, 20 minutes. And, but I ran it. And I remember being so proud of that. And that's what got me hooked. And then from there, I ran my first half marathon at St. Jude in Memphis, and then graduated college. That's when I really was battling my alcoholism. And it was a dark point in time. But whenever there were sober periods or I was in rehab, I would turn to running. And then when I ultimately began my sobriety journey in December of 2019, I really leaned into running pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So running has kind of been that tool for you for a long time. When you were first getting into it, I guess, when your friends kind of pushed you into it, what do you think it was about running that had you coming back to it at that point?
I hated it at first. I truly did. I was like, this is awful. And, but it's just, I love words of affirmation, feelings of accomplishment person. So when I started seeing like, I ran a mile, and then I was able to put kind of a metric behind what I was doing, it became exciting because I could track it. And it became rewarding and something for me that I was doing and just something really I could be proud of.
For sure. Yeah. And how long was it from, if you remember, like when you took you went for that first mile run to when you ran your first half marathon? Like what was that time frame?
Oh gosh. So it was summer of 2014 is when I started running, and I ran that half in December of 2015.
Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty quick how I got there. But it was worth it. It was amazing.
Definitely. Yeah. And what was it like that first time? I know in kind of relation, well, sorry, let me make sure I have the timeline right. So half marathon, and then where were you at in your sobriety journey at that point when you hit that half marathon point?
At that point, alcohol wasn't a huge issue. I mean, I was drinking. I remember it was there. I mean, my training, I followed like the Nike running plan, Run Club training plan when I was in college. And, I followed it pretty closely, but I wasn't like super, super into it. I just remember somebody told me if I could run 8 miles, I could run a half marathon. And I was like, sure. Okay. And so I remember running like 8 or 8.5 miles as like my final training run. And then I was like, all right, we can do this. But at the time, thankfully, it wasn't too much of an issue. But after that half is when it really started to go downhill.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. And then I guess before we get there, that first half marathon, I think that's the half marathon point's like your first big finish line where you get to feel that sense of accomplishment of like completing a harder distance. What was that feeling like for you the first time that you crossed a finish line like that?
It was unreal. The St. Jude race in Memphis, if anybody has a chance to run it, I highly recommend it. I actually hope to possibly run it this year. Because it'll be 10 years since I ran it.
Oh, cool.
So it's such a spectacular race. And honestly, I feel like if I had done a smaller half marathon that didn't have the crowd support, I may not have stuck with the sport. And not saying that smaller half marathons aren't, because I've done plenty at this point, but I think doing that for your first one and having that crowd support and that community there really drew me into loving long distance so much. And it was such a special moment.
Totally. Yeah, no, I think that's actually a really great point for anybody that's kind of a beginning runner, like looking for races, is you're going to have to depend on a lot for your first half marathon and your first marathon, of course. But yeah, strategically choosing a race where you're going to have that support is definitely huge.
Yeah, because you don't want to, if that's what they do, but finishing a race and they're like, well, I don't want to do that again. That wasn't right. Fun. And it's like, well, I mean, I've done some races where it was just really just me. In those moments, and those are special races too, but for your first one, it's so cool to have that community.
Totally. Yeah, cool. So cross that finish line, obviously it was pretty impactful for you. And then where did kind of your journey go from there? Where did things kind of go from there?
So I continued running pretty regularly through my junior and senior years of college, and then I graduated and it all just kind of fell apart at that point in time. I graduated. I was actually engaged and I was supposed to get married. We ended up not getting married, which was good for both of us. We were definitely not ready. I for sure was not. And I was back in my hometown, had a degree, but no plan, trying to plan a wedding. And then on top of that, I didn't know how to function without alcohol. There were days where it was just really dark. And my family didn't know what to do with me. I didn't know what to do with me. And that's when I went through rehab number one, and they sent me to Arizona for 48 days in the summer of 2017.
Gotcha.
But when I was there, we would stay in these houses on these beautiful properties in Arizona. It's the only time I've ever been to Arizona. It was for rehab. So when people ask me, they're like, oh, what'd you go to Arizona for? I'm like, oh, well, that's another story.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was beautiful out there. But on these properties we stayed on, most of them had fencing. And I figured out I could run the perimeter of them and run, like, I think it was 4.5 times around was a mile. And so every day after, we would have like our counseling sessions, breakout sessions, all the rehab things, I would go and run 1 to 2 miles. And it was just, because I was like, I have to do something. And
totally.
That's when I looking back at the time, I didn't see it, but now looking back, I see, I'm like, oh wow. Like that's when I realized like running and exercise was going to be such a tool for me through my recovery. Something to lean on.
Totally. Yeah. And what do you, I know a lot of people talk about running as like a processing tool. It's something that it's like their therapy. They can go out and they can kind of zone into themselves and really be present. But sobriety, that's a whole other level that's amplified. So like what, when you were doing those runs while you were in rehab, like what was going through your head? How was it helping? Like, how were you feeling internally?
So when a lot of people enter into recovery, I think one of the biggest reasons people go back or relapse is the shame and the overwhelming feelings of shame that you get, because all of a sudden you have this substance that removes those feelings, and then you are sober or trying to be sober, and all of those feelings come rushing in, and you start like remembering shameful moments or blackout periods where like I did stuff to my family or to myself or to others, like the bridges I burned. And you get in those moments in your head and you're like, well, I'm just absolutely worthless. Like, what is the point of this? I mean, everybody thinks I'm going to mess up anyway, so I might as well start drinking again or picking up their drug of choice. And where running comes into that is it was so nice at the end of those days, because in those days you're talking so much about your addiction and what you did. And like, it's and you're feeling all those feelings. So at night, when I would run the property, I mean, I didn't have access to alcohol, thankfully. It was rehab, but I was like, I have to do something. And I would go on those runs, and it made me feel some worth again, just a little bit. And it just, it slowly compacted and grew over time. I could feel like, wow, I'm not worthless. I do have something to offer, even if it's just in this mile or 2 miles that I'm able to give my body. And it just slowly builds over time. And that's why it's such an amazing tool for people in recovery, because they're able to build that sense of worth back and that sense of accomplishment back. And then it starts to fuel a bigger and better fire to do something good for yourself rather than turn back to something that is so negative.
Totally. Yeah. Wow. That makes so much sense of like, yeah, it's giving you something that you can like build on and build on and build on until it's something else. So that's amazing. And then where did we go from there? So how long were you in that particular rehab center in Arizona for?
So I was there for 48 days. I left that rehab, came home, and about 2 weeks later I relapsed and called off my wedding. That wasn't even a thing. And we called it off. And then I was like, wow, I'm really here. I'm in my hometown. It's a tiny area. There's not much really going for me. I have this degree in hospitality management, and I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And so I started working for a couple small little shops in my area, just something. And I was living at home. About another year goes by, and I lost a job from drinking. Mm. And my family was like, all right, we're going to go to another rehab. And that's when we found a local place here. It's in Mobile, Alabama, and it's called Home of Grace for Women. And it's not a medical facility, so they don't offer detox or anything like that. It's only ran by donations. Mm. And it's a 3-month, 90-day program, and it is phenomenal. And I went through that program that summer, and that's when I started to kind of think like, okay, maybe I shouldn't be drinking, but I was still in that headspace of, well, I'm in my early 20s. This is fine. This is, you just kind of gaslight yourself into thinking sure. like, oh, this is normal. Like, yeah, and I'm like, yeah. No, and like, I look back and I'm like, that is not normal. I was in rehab.
Yeah.
But it's at the time you don't want to be told no. You don't want to be told you can't do something.
Right.
And so I went through that program and it was really good. I think that's when a lot of realization started kind of hitting me. But I was stubborn, and I graduated that program, and about a month later I was drinking again. But I felt like I, at that point, everybody kind of knew something was wrong, and I was, the sad part about addiction is we're so manipulative and we hide stuff. And so I did about another year, kind of in that same holding pattern. And, I went through Home of Grace again, a second time. So All in all, I spent almost 8 months of my life in rehab over like a 3-year period. But I came out that third time and I stayed on the property in their grad dorms, kind of like a halfway house situation. And sure. because I knew if I went home to my family, I love my family, but there was a lot of codependency there, a lot of just it. So much friction, and like I wasn't going to listen to them and they weren't going to listen to me to see what I needed for my recovery. But yeah, it took 3 rehabs to kind of knock some sense into me.
Sure. Yeah. And through that time, I mean, not to kind of bring it like back to running, because obviously
there was
more important things to be focusing on during that period in your life. But like, did you continue with that same processing tool from the first rehab center in these other situations as well?
Yes. So at Home of Grace, they had this like walking track. But at the time when I was at Home of Grace, it was always the dead of summer. I don't know why, but for some reason I was like, I just want to act bad in the summer. So we're going to sure. go to rehab. And, sure. But it was in Mobile here, where I live across the bay from there. And it was like the dead of summer. So it was like 80, 90 degrees. So I didn't do a ton of running, but I walked that walking track so much. And there were a couple times I would run, but not too much, just with the heat. But that's where, like, now where I'm in this period where I'm not running, dealing with a hip issue, and I've been doing walking. It's been kind of nice, almost like reflecting back on that period of time where walking was a huge part of recovery for me.
For sure. Yeah. So you still had that form of movement that you could use through that time.
Yes.
Cool. So how long did you stay in that sort of like, I forget what you called it. I'm sorry. Like that outpatient, like staying on the property after the fact. How long were you there?
I was there about a month. And I had a friend, she had owned a house in the area. And thankfully I was working for the company I now work for now. And they actually took me back because I had been working for them prior to my third stay at rehab. And I just fell completely apart, went through rehab, got out of rehab, and they said, you can still have a job if you want it. This company's been a huge blessing to my family. But I moved in with her. She had a room. I could afford it. And I did start drinking again a little bit. But at that point I was like, okay, I'm out of my family's house. Not that I ever wanted to escape my family, it had gotten very toxic for both sides. And
sure.
There needed to be some distance. And so I was out for about a month. I did start drinking again. And that's when I met my now husband. We work for the same company. We met at a work event. And he doesn't drink. But he was big into the gym. Like, he's huge into like weightlifting. And he got his degree in exercise science. And so we would go to the gym a lot together. And that's when I started running on the treadmill. Cause it was still it was late summer at this point, like August, September, October. And, that's when I started running on the treadmill, and really leaning back into running. And then on top of that, he didn't drink. And so I was like, okay, well, this is good for me. He doesn't drink. And so it just kind of grew from there. And he, through our relationship and seeing like him living without alcohol and then me seeing that, I was like, okay, this might be possible. And then it just kind of grew from there. I don't know if that answered the question you were asking. I kind of went on a tangent.
No, you're good. You're good. This is your story. So all good. Cool. So you met your now husband, and he was kind of an inspiration for you to kind of walk this path, or I guess maybe not even an inspiration, just like somebody that's next to you doing something that you can also do, which I think is huge, you know, just like having that person.
Yeah. God knew I did not need to be with somebody that drank. It wasn't going to work. And with Zach, he didn't drink because it gives him headaches. He gets like real red from it, and it just like inflames him really quick. So he was just like, I'm just not into it. And then for me, I was like, well, I'm a little too into it.
Maybe we can find a middle.
Yeah, I was like, we gotta find out. And so for a minute there, it took him a while to kind of realize how deep in my addiction it was. But towards the end of it, he saw me several times, pretty much blackout. There were a couple periods because I was trying to hide it from him that I was still drinking. I was like, yeah, but I'm sober now. And it was just like, I was always like one toe in, but the rest of me was out. Yeah. And then that one night, it was December 19th. I just went all out. I'd gone to a family funeral that day. And, that night I don't even know how much I drank, but I got back to his apartment. I was driving. I don't know how. It was so many things I look back on. I'm like, gosh, I don't know how I'm still here. And, I walked into, his apartment, and he knew. He was like, you are. And, he got me to lay down and go to bed. And that next morning I woke up, and, he sat on the edge of his bed and he was like, this isn't working for you. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, this isn't working. I thought he wanted to break up with me. I was like, yeah, because we'd kind of had a couple of instances like this. I was like, all right, this is it for him. I'm done.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, like, I see how badly you want this. And he's like, but this drinking thing is just not working. And I don't know why it was him saying it in that time, in that period, in that moment. And I was like, you know, you're right. This really isn't working. As much as I was forcing it and trying to, in my head, I was like, I'm not normal if I can't drink.
Yeah.
Which is like such a crazy thought. But that's just kind of what I had been conditioned to think. And then from there, we just started one day at a time, one week at a time. And then he started counting with me, like how long I was going. And then it was 6 months and then it was a year. And it's like, now I'm over 5 years and I'm like, wow.
That's amazing.
But through that, it was him and running that really carried me along.
Amazing. I just got chills. Like when you said 5 years, that's so, so cool. I'm so happy for you.
It's pretty incredible.
That's awesome. Cool. So you said that running was a big part of that throughout that time. So where did we intersect after you had that conversation? You kind of came to that realization. Where did running kind of make its way back into your life from there?
Yes. So that was December 19th, or December 20th, 2019. And so I started going into work and I would get off work. I'm not a morning person. But this is kind of where it goes back to my first time in rehab. It was like, I would go through work all day. And then at night, that's when I would go to the gym and I would run on the treadmills. And it was great. Like I had a schedule and I was building a life. Like I was starting to see I was functioning in sobriety, and that was the most exciting thing. I mean, I know it sounds so little, but it would be just like little tasks I was doing for myself, like my laundry or my self-care, just those little things that people do daily. Like I didn't know how to do, sober. But all of a sudden it came around February, March of 2020. And that's when COVID hit. And so all the gyms shut down and I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I have this plan. Like, I would go to work and I would go to the gym and I would run on the treadmill. And I would just like do 2 or 3 miles, just whatever felt good. And I was like, okay, well, the gym shut down. I've got to find where I'm going to do this. And so that's when I started running outside again, which I hadn't really done in 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started pushing the distance again. And like, because I was outside, I wasn't confined to the treadmill.
Yeah.
And I started just like pushing distance. And I remember I came home one night and I was like, I ran 6 miles. And he was like, what? Like, that's really far. I was like, I used to do that in college. Like when I trained for, and I was like, I did it tonight. Like, and it just happened.
Yeah.
And I was starting to see that growth and that accomplishment again. And like I said, it just slowly compounds on itself over time. And then you get to a point where you don't want anything to take that away from you. And that's when I realized that the switch had flipped in my head. I wasn't going to let alcohol take that away from me. When I thought like, oh, everything else is taking alcohol from me. It's like, no, I'm not going to let alcohol be that one thing to take all of this from me. And that switch flip is when it really, really became so special.
Yeah. Sounds like you had too much to lose at that point.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Running was working its way back into your life. So from there, so you hit that 6 mile distance, and then were you just planning on continuing to try and build distance from there? Or were you thinking like races again? Like what were you thinking once you had hit that mark?
So at that point I wasn't even thinking about races so much. It really, I'm really kind of thankful that I know a lot of people that get into this journey kind of start where they have like a running background, where they did cross country, they did track, and they kind of had that whole racing thing for them. For me, it wasn't like that. It was running was just, it was a release. It was where I found peace. And that's when I, for the first probably 2 years of my recovery, I just ran for me. I don't think I did any races.
I love that.
It was perfect. It was just what I needed. Like there were some days I remember doing a couple like longish runs, or for me, it was like 6 to 8 miles at the time. But for the most part, it was like 2 to 3 miles. And I was just like, that was just what I needed to like round out my day. And then I transferred. I was in an office at that time. And then I came to my now work from home position.
Yeah.
And my previous position, I was working some Saturdays. I really kind of had odd hours because I was in a car dealership. I wasn't selling cars, but I was the office admin. And so just kind of weird hours. So I then transitioned to this work from home position where I had like a lot more flexibility, more job freedom, or just a lot more work-life balance. And so I had Saturdays free, and my husband still works on some Saturdays. So I remember one Friday I saw like an ad for like a local 5K that next morning, and we don't live in a huge area. So, I mean, like I signed up the morning of the race.
Yeah.
But I remember waking up, I was like, I'm going to go run this 5K. And all of a sudden I started just like looking for local 5Ks every weekend. And that was 2023. Yeah. 2023. That spring, that's when I started kind of getting into races, and I realized I had built such a good base by just running consistently and just not really I was just running to run, paying attention to paces. And, I don't live in a big area. I'm not fast, but I just remember I like ran one of those 5Ks and I got like first in my age group, and I was like, oh my gosh, I was like,
that's awesome.
And it was just, and that's when I was like, okay, so like, this is so fun. Like, I already love this. And now I can gain even more accomplishment from it. And that's when the racing kind of came into the picture. And I did another half marathon. And that half marathon, I remember I was like, I really want to run it in under 2 hours. Because my first half I ran, I went St. Jude. I think I did like 2 hours, 20 minutes. And, I was like, you know, I really want to see if I can do under 2 hours. Like, I'm not drinking, like I'm taking care of myself and I'm running consistently. And I remember running it and I did it under 2 hours. I was like, oh my gosh, like I just seeing that improvement and that excitement is just what makes the sport so cool. And then to add that on top of my sobriety, it was so much fun seeing all of that growth.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's what's so special about like training for your first race, or training for like a new distance, or training for like a new time or something with running. It's always so exciting because it's new milestones every time. You're like proving it to yourself every single time that you try for a new goal. So did you have any, like you ran the half marathon, the sub-2 goal was the goal. Were you like seeking out any resources for plans, or like thinking about how you were going to put this together, or were you kind of just going off your own training?
I just really went off my own training. I know that's probably not what people do, but I just remember thinking, okay, well, if I'm running this, and then I know on race day, I usually run around this and for this distance. And I was like, okay, I think I could do sub-2. And then I'd started going to a run club also. Mm. And I was talking to people there that were big into racing and stuff. And like, I was telling them like my numbers, and I was like, yeah, you know, I might think I, and they're like, you could do that. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, all right. So they, talking to them in that community really just pulled me into like the running community even more. And then that's when I realized, I was like, okay, like I'm setting these small goals for myself, but these people see I can do even more.
Yeah.
And like, that's when the running community is so cool and supportive. If you find the right like people in it, is where people are like, no, I see like even more in you, like even more potential. And that's when it gets so fun. And like, you come to the club that week and they're like, how was your race? Like, what'd you do? Or like, they see what you post on social media.
Yeah.
And it just becomes, it's just such a supportive place. And that's why I think so many people in recovery fall into it, because it's such a great place.
Totally. Yeah. If you find the right community around you, they can pull you through so much. And like you said, like you, we set almost limits for ourselves. I think especially when we're earlier on in our journeys, our running journeys, is like we convince ourselves, oh, I'm not a runner, I'm just running a half marathon, or I'm not a runner, I'm just running this 5K. And it's really like the people around you, the community that surrounds you, that convince you, no, like you're a runner, you can do this, and you can actually do a lot more than you think that you can. I think it's so important to have that community around you for sure.
Yeah, it's spectacular, and everybody should fall into it at some point. It's totally. It's amazing.
Cool. Well, I know you ran several half marathons since then, because you've got 5 half marathons under your belt. So I don't want to fast forward through too much, but I want to kind of hear how this marathon idea came into your mind as well. Where did you start thinking about the marathon distance? Like, how did that all start coming up for you?
I really kind of started thinking about it more in run club. Because we would run like a little 3-mile loop, every Wednesday, and we'd all hang out afterwards on this patio at this restaurant here locally. And, Mark, he started our run club, and he runs, the Marine Corps marathon every year in DC. And then he does another marathon. So he tries to do at least 2 a year. And he was talking about it, and, he was like, he's like, I can do this. You can do this. And I was like, well, I mean, maybe one day I'll run a marathon. I was like, but I'll probably just run one just to say I did it. And he goes, and I think he could see it in me. He was like, oh no, she's going to run one and then it's done. Like it's over.
Yeah.
And, he was like, well, and I was like, well, I've always put my name in the lottery for New York, but I never get that. And he was like, well, he said, I've ran Chicago. Chicago's pretty cool. And I was like, oh yeah, that's one of the majors. And he was like, why don't you put your name in the lottery for that? And that was like October of 2023. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I mean, sure. And I remember going home and like finding the website and like put my name in the lottery. And I told my husband, I was like, hey, if we get charged, it's going to be this much money. Cause it was like almost
$300. Yeah. It's expensive.
And I was like, hey, and he goes, all right. He goes, what are the chances? I was like, probably not. He was like, well, okay, that'll be your Christmas present. I was like, okay.
Perfect.
And I went to the dentist in December. And I remember I always set my dentist appointments for early in the morning. So it was like 7:15. I'm sitting in the waiting room and I get this email and it's like, congrats, you're in for the Chicago Marathon 2024. And I was like, what? I was like, wait a second. I was like, because it had been roughly in the back of my mind. I was like, you know, I'll be sober 5 years, December 2024. I was like, how cool would it be if I did my marathon just like that around year. That time? I was like, how cool would that be? And then I got pulled in Chicago and I was like, okay, all right, we're doing it.
Here we go.
And I feel like if I hadn't have signed up for that lottery, and I feel like that goal probably wouldn't have happened. But having that community push me to do that and then actually getting picked, I mean, I think it all happened for a reason.
Totally.
And I wouldn't change my first marathon for anything.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool that it lined up with your anniversary year too. That's like beyond. But so what I know they pulled the lottery earlier in the year. Is that when you found out was earlier 2024, or what month? Like, how long did you have when you found out to when race day was, if you remember?
So it was December 2023.
Okay.
It was either, yeah, I think it was December. Yeah, December 2023. So I was like, okay, so I'm running this race in October of 2024. I was like, okay, I've got about 10 months roughly. And I really started kind of trying to build my base for it in March or April. Mm-hmm. I started pretty early because I was like, I told myself I want to cross that finish line healthy and happy and not miserable. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to hurt, but I want to cross that finish line and just be so I just want it to be everything it can be in that moment. And so that's why I started kind of pretty early, trying to build a pretty solid base. March or April.
Cool. So yeah, you had plenty of time. And I love that goal for your first marathon. I had a very similar goal of just like, I want to finish and be able to enjoy it at the end and not die. So not putting any like time constraints or anything like that on your first one, I think is huge. And you gave yourself plenty of time. So you were kind of working off of base too. So I guess you were just kind of like making sure that everything was in place for that. When you got through base building, you were training over the summer. What was it like kind of training like outside, or were you doing mostly treadmill runs for the summer? What did that look like over the summer leading up?
Summer was rough. I knew it was going to be hot and humid because I live right on the coast. Our humidity is like 200%.
Oh gosh.
So I was waking up on Saturdays for my long runs about, I think the earliest I woke up one day was 3 a.m. But usually around 4 or 5 a.m. to,
jeez.
Yeah. Cause my run club started to do kind of a long run group also on Saturday mornings, and they wouldn't meet until like 6:30. But I knew, I was like, okay, if I get there at 5:30, I can get this many miles for my long run and then run with them. Mm. So it was super helpful with my training because I was able to do some solo, some with people.
That's really nice. Yeah.
It really helped the motivation piece. But yeah, I was getting up super early to beat the heat because by 9, 10 a.m. here, you don't want to be outside. Yeah. So
brutal.
Those early mornings were painful, but worth it.
Totally. Yeah. And then when you actually were starting your marathon training, was it like an 18-week program? Do you remember 20-week? Like how far out did you start to actually like start your marathon build?
It was about 20 weeks. And I kind of cobbled together a plan from just like free resources online. Mm-hmm. I did follow some Garmin workouts that my watch would recommend. And I just kind of cobbled something together. I didn't go with a coach. I was like, well, it's my first one. I just kind of want to see what I can do.
And
yeah, it worked out. I wish I'd implemented more strength training.
Mm, I feel like everybody says that for their first. It's a tough one to incorporate.
Like, if I had done a little more of that. I think for my next race, I definitely see myself doing a little bit lower mileage and implementing more strength so I don't burn myself out.
Sure. Yeah. So when you were getting towards the end of training, is that how you were feeling? Like once you got to your 20 mile run or whatever your peak was, were you feeling like pretty burnt out, or how was the body feeling?
No, it wasn't. I never felt burnt out, thankfully. I felt good. I think I got ready a little too early. I remember I ran 18 miles and I think it was still 6 weeks out. Mm. And I was like, I wish I had, because I was just so excited.
Yeah.
And so that is the only downside of doing it kind of on your own, is like, you're your own worst enemy.
Sure.
Because some runs you're like, oh, I feel so good, I'll just keep going. It's like, no, keep just slowly building. And definitely didn't hurt myself then. But I wish looking back that I had kind of, I think going forward, I'll probably do an 16 to 18 week build probably in the future.
Sure.
Because 20 weeks was good for my first, but I think going forward, just so I make sure I follow and build appropriately.
Do something like that. Yeah, that makes sense. And then leading up to it, like the week leading up, obviously Chicago, going from Alabama to Chicago. That's where you were living at the time, right? Alabama as well?
Yes. Yeah, I'm cool. Here in Bama.
Cool. So yeah, so you had some travel logistics. Like how were you feeling leading up? Were you stressed about anything? How was the week before Chicago?
It wasn't too bad. The taper was kind of, ugh. I mean, you don't know what to do with yourself. You're so jittery. Thankfully, logistics, we don't have like super large airports near us. So usually for all flights, we have to connect. But for some reason, we usually fly out of Pensacola, Florida, and they had a direct flight to Chicago. I was like, all right, this is meant to be.
Yeah.
And it was like a 2.5 hour flight. I was like, done. So we took our flight, and I think logistically, my husband, he went with me, and he's not a huge fan of like public transportation. He's like, oh, we'll just Uber from the airport. I was like, no, the airport's like an hour from the city and traffic's bad. And so I figured out like the whole train system. I sound like a whole country hick over here, but like we don't have public transportation here.
No, I get you. Yeah.
And so I was explaining to him. He was like, what? Like, we'll just take an Uber. I was like, no, we got to take like the transit system. And he's so funny. I know a lot of people say when they travel with their significant other, one person is like the figure outer and then the other person just kind of goes along.
Yeah.
I'm the logistics person. So like when we get there and I'm like, oh yeah, now we go here. And Zach's like, what?
I love it.
But yeah, it was fun figuring that out together and also kind of helped take my mind off of it. Those hours leading up to the race. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Did you guys get in like the day before the race or 2 days before?
Yeah, we got in that Friday. So cool. Yeah, we got in Friday, we did the expo Saturday and ran the race Sunday.
Cool. Well, all the excitement just kind of builds. I mean, I'm running Chicago this year, so I'll find out for myself this year, but just interviewing people, I've heard that like it just builds and builds and builds for these majors. So like the night before, how were you feeling in the hotel room leading up to the race?
The night before is when it really started to sink in. And I started carb loading Friday. Mm-hmm. And that was something I was super wanted to do right. Mm-hmm. So by the time Saturday got there, I felt so gross because all I'd been eating was just like bread and carbs juices. And I was like, I know this is going to pay off, but man. And so we went to this Italian place, that everybody had recommended, Saturday night, and it was delicious. But that's when I was starting getting so nervous. Like I would take a bite and I like couldn't swallow. The nervous energy started to kind of hit me. And Zach's over there just like eating. He's like, can I try that? And he's like, oh, and he's like, what are you nervous about? He's like, you're just running. And I'm like,
yeah, just running.
Just running 26.2 miles.
Yeah, casual.
And he goes, okay, well, I'll finish yours. And I'm like, what? So I told him, I was like, next time we go to Chicago, we have to go back there to eat because I did not get to eat.
Right. Yeah.
I was already so stuffed and then so nervous. But yeah, that's when it started to hit me that night.
For sure. Yeah. So cool. And then Chicago is an early wake up. Got to the finish line. I know that the logistics were probably what they were, but I've heard Chicago is one of the easier ones. So maybe it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. And it's so fun that morning because everybody's waking up and it just looks like a bunch of zombies with really nice running shoes all walking towards one. and you're walking and like I got into the elevator at my hotel and somebody else, they were on their way. And so we started talking and it's just like that community feeling. Everybody's just kind of like, all right, we're all about to do this thing. And we're all just kind of like talking to try and get our minds off of it, but still be excited and lean into that excitement. And it's a really special, moment. But yeah, the logistics weren't too bad for Chicago. We were about a mile from the start line.
Oh, perfect.
And yeah, it was worth it. It's expensive, but do a hotel close by for the full experience if you can. But it was fun. I'd say the hardest part was trying to find Zach after the race. Because it's just, there's so many people in like the finisher village. And I remember because I was like all emotional. I was like, I finished the race. And then he is like, where are you? And I'm like, I just finished the marathon. And he's like, well, I can't find you.
You're like, give me a second.
But you have to like walk a whole mile to the finisher village. And it's just, but it's all part of it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're at the start line. Nerves are going. Everything is exciting. We're talking to people, like you said. Then starting line, we start. Let's break it down in a couple different pieces. I guess, did you have a sort of a race strategy in mind? Were you thinking like the 10-10-10K or like half marathon, half marathon? Like what were you thinking in terms of strategy, if anything?
I had a couple ideas in my head. I was like, all right, we're going to go into this. We'll see kind of what the vibe is when we start. But I just remember starting out and I was like, okay, don't go out too fast. Mm-hmm. That was in my head. And I remember just like running those first few feet. And I mean, they hype you up because like they start you in the waves And then you see the first wave go, and then they slowly start moving us up, and all the people around you were like jumping up and down, and they're doing stretches, and you're like, do I need to be doing those stretches? Yeah. And I'm like, what do I, am I? And then I'm like, okay, you're fine. And then you get up there, and then you see the start pads where like the chip time starts. And I just remember like running over it, starting my watch. And I just remember looking down. I was like, okay, I was aiming for an 8:45 pace. That was my goal. I was like, all right, 8:45 pace, 8:45 pace. And I just remember running, and I looked down, and it was like 8:30. And I was like, okay, we're not too fast, but like, we can't go faster than that. Mm-hmm. And then I found a rhythm, and I found just, it just all fell into place. And that's where I really look back and see where you trust your training. And that's where it clicks, come race day.
Totally. Yeah. And then you've got the energy around you and the adrenaline and all of that. That's going to also pull you through. That's different than your solo trail or solo runs that you have through training.
Yes, very much so. The energy was just, and then I saw my husband at like shortly after mile one. He had my big head on a stick.
Oh, I love it.
And oh yeah, that was the only way I would ever see him. And I saw, and like, that was just like, oh, okay, he's here for me.
We're good. Yeah.
And that's such a special moment. He tried to see me a couple other times on the course, but he couldn't get there. He was trying to figure it out. Like I said, that is not his forte.
So. I was gonna say, he didn't have you, so set up.
He didn't have me. He was like, ah. And but I did see him around mile 18. Cool. And that was when I really needed to see him. I was like, okay, all right. He called me when I was on the course around mile 16. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, you're going to take a left and then another left. And then I'm going to be on your right. Cause he was looking at the course map and where my little dot was. And I was like, okay, I need you. And that's when I first started crying. And he was like, I know you're doing so great. You're doing really well. Like, you got this. And I was like, thank you. And, like, we hung up the phone. I was in my headphones, and I like clicked the off button. And the stranger next to me, it was an older gentleman. He just turns and he goes, that was the sweetest conversation. Like, he heard our whole conversation. Because when you're so on the sweet course,
yeah,
and like, everybody's right by you.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's a good one. And he's like, yes, he is. And then we just went back to running. It was a sweet moment.
So sweet. Yeah. I mean, I won't go on too much of a tangent, but like, it's so sweet, those people that you meet on race day, because they're just such a glimpse in your race. Like, to them, that might have meant everything or nothing, or who knows, but like, you never know who you're going to impact on race day. So like, talk to everybody, listen to everybody. It's like, it's so cool, these little stories that we pick up from just complete strangers that are also doing these crazy things with us.
Yeah. It's like, a quick story. When I was in line at the porta potties, of course, before the race started, I met this nice couple, and they had an extra heat sheet blanket. Mm-hmm. Cause Chicago was weird this year. It wasn't too cold, but it was still kind of chilly. And, so I didn't really bring any throwaway layers. I looked at the forecast. I was like, I'll be fine. And I would have been, but they were so nice. They handed me this heat sheet blanket, and that they had extra. And we just started talking and going back and forth. I didn't even get their names. And then I shared that on like a reel I did on Instagram about this couple I met, and they saw it and commented.
Oh,
they were like, we gave you the blanket. And I was like, oh, thank you. Like, that's what is so cool about the internet now.
I love that. That's so cool that they found you. That's like so random. Like, Chicago's 50,000 something runners, that the fact that they found you is insane.
Yeah. I was like, oh man. I was like, y'all saved my morning. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's so cool.
Yeah.
So cool. So then you saw your husband at mile 18. And is that where you've hit, where hit feel, felt like you were hitting the wall, so to speak, or how were you feeling at that point?
I don't think I ever hit a wall.
Good. Yeah.
I really attribute that to the carb load, and the training, of course, but the carb load, man, it stinks. It is the hardest thing. Everybody always talks about like, oh, it's the best. Like, you get to eat all the bread you want. You get to eat whatever. And I'm like, yeah, until you don't want it. Until you're like, okay, I've seen enough of this. And, thankfully I drink a lot of juices. That helped a lot. The liquid carbs, but I really think the carb load helped me not hit a wall, but there was a moment when I realized it was about mile 18, mile 19. I was like, I am hurting. I was like, man, this is when it gets tough. And, it was a moment. I was like, all right. But I was like, we're here. We got a 10K left. We could do this.
Yeah. Just one foot in front of the other. And were there, I know in the beginning, when we first started talking, you said you were a big words of affirmation person. Like, were you saying things to yourself? Like, what mantras to yourself? What were you saying when things were getting hard?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I said to myself during training and during the race was like, we've done harder things. We've done harder things. Like, getting sober was the hardest thing I ever did. So running this marathon is probably the second hardest, but we've done harder things. Like, this is temporary in the scheme of life. Like, this is so temporary, and you've done your training, you trust your training, and all you can do is just one foot in front of the other, like you said, like, and you will reach the finish line.
Yeah. I love that. Cool. And you did, obviously. We reached the finish line. What was that finish line experience like for you in Chicago?
It's such a funny thing, the finish line, because all you think about leading up to that race is the logistics, then the running of it. And then you think about that moment when you cross the finish line, but those moments after, you're like, I didn't think about this. And then you're there. And so like, you cross the finish line, you stop your watch, and like, all those emotions are hitting you. And then all of a sudden people are handing you things. Like, you get like a water, then you get a heat sheet blanket, and then I'm getting a banana and then a medal. And I'm like, I'm handed all these things, and I just am like a wobbling zombie. And all the people around you are just kind of like in the same boat. They're like, what do we do now? Like, what do we have to stop running? Like, what now? And, but it was such a cool moment to see. And you realize that those big major marathons, that there is such a long shoot you have to go through to get to the finisher village.
Yeah.
But honestly, walking as much as we did after the race really helped my legs.
Yeah, just stay loose, because that's the worst thing you can do is like sit right after you finish a marathon. So that probably didn't feel like a blessing at the time, but it probably was a blessing after the fact, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. So that's the first marathon. I mean, that's an incredible experience and so cool. I love to hear these first marathon stories at World Majors too, because I think, like you said, it's just amplified, like the energy, the people, the experiences, the conversations you have, like, it's all just on a platform for you at these major marathons. So that was really cool. And thank you for walking through that. What do you feel like from your marathon journey, from your running journey in general, like, what do you think is a lesson, if you broke it down to just one? I'm sure there's many, but what do you think is a lesson that you learned about yourself through that entire experience?
I would say that don't put limits on yourself. We are so much stronger than we realize. There's always something left in the tank. And it's in those moments, that's when the resilience and the character builds. And that would be the biggest thing I would tell people, is don't set goals, but don't just reach those goals and then stop. Like, keep pushing, keep realizing, like, you're far more capable than you realize.
I love that. That's great. Cool. Awesome. Well, just to wrap up here, I like to ask a couple fun questions at the end, just to kind of get an idea of what you've liked for like fuel and shoes and things like that through your journey. I always give the disclaimer, of course, that fuel, shoes, all of this is all your own journey. So try everything and anything. Trial and error is going to be your best friend, especially with something like fuel. It's so independent. But for you, what have you liked for like fuel options over the years?
Yes. So fueling, I didn't get too much into until really training for the marathon. I had really no idea what all that entailed, but I did a huge deep dive on it and practiced a ton through my training. But I landed on my absolute favorites are the Sys gels, the Science and Sport. Mm-hmm. Gels are some of my absolute favorites. And then the Crank Sports e-gels. I liked alternating those on my long runs, because the Sys gel is a little more liquidy. And the Crank is definitely thicker. So alternating the two, you didn't get like that, I guess, that just exhaustion of the one type over and over again.
Totally.
So those are definitely my go-tos moving forward, are Sys and Crank Sports. Love their stuff. And I also really like Ketone IQ. It tastes awful, but I love the locked in feeling it gives me on my long runs. So those are kind of cool to experiment with. If you have the ability, experiment with all the fuel options, and find what works for you for sure.
Totally. Yeah. Cool. And then shoes. What have you liked for shoes over time?
I really started out Asics was what I ran my first half marathon in. And I love Asics. The gel Nimbus, one of my favorites. But what was funny that I found during this training for my full, I fell back in love with Hoka. The Mach 6 particularly is probably one of my favorite shoes, the Mach 6. I love that shoe. And then I actually ran my marathon in the Hoka Cello, their carbon plated shoe. And it was a lot of fun. So it was a brand I didn't think I would fall back into, but really they've quickly become one of my favorites.
Cool. Love it. And then I normally ask kind of what's coming up next, but I know you are going through an interesting part of your running journey where now you've got an injury that you're kind of nursing and getting back into things. So do you want to talk a little bit about kind of what you're doing for this injury, how you're planning on kind of making a comeback into running, so to speak?
Yes. So it's been almost 5 weeks, no running, which has been odd. It's probably the longest I've gone, in 10 years. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. But it's honestly been good for me mentally, physically, emotionally. It is so okay to step back and take a break. And I'm thankful I'm in the headspace I am now with my sobriety, because I probably in the early days of sobriety, if this would have happened, it would have thrown me so off. But that just goes to show where growth really definitely happens on the journey. But right now, physical therapy, gonna get dry needling done this week. And lots of stretching and more strength training for my hips. So yeah, but there is a possible fall race in the pipeline that I am very much looking forward to hopefully happening. We will see.
Awesome.
Can't say too much right now, but that is something I'm hopefully going to be able to share soon.
Cool. That's exciting. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that, especially as a runner, injuries are like our worst nightmare, where we have to take a back seat. So I encourage everybody to follow along with you on your journey, obviously, while you're working through this injury, and then hopefully announcing something in the fall. And if they want to follow along with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, please. I'm on Instagram at Helen Hansen Smith. And I'm also on TikTok at Helen Hansen Smith.
Awesome. Well, I'll link everything in the show notes as well. But thank you so much for walking through, and especially just being vulnerable about your journey and everything. I'm sure it's going to impact a lot of people. So I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Taylor. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @MyFirstMarathonPod. See you on the next one.